Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
1 week on from the first release of UFO files on the war.gov/UFO site, and if you thought this story was going to calm down, it really hasn't. We have had reactions from politicians, claims that more than 40 videos are coming soon, comments about pastors and disclosure, a resurfaced Joe Rogan clip that suddenly feels very relevant, Japan being dragged into the conversation, Neil deGrasse Tyson releasing an alien book while still being one of the most dismissive voices on UFOs, and even the Vatican Observatory's former director weighs in on the evidence, saying it's no better than it was in 1948. So today is not about going through every single file again, it's about where the conversation has gone since last week, because whether you were impressed by the first batch or totally underwhelmed by it, one thing is very clear, folks, the topic is moving incredibly fast. And the big question 1 week later is, was that first release the beginning of real transparency, or was it just the low-hanging fruit? Hi everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. As always, my name is Andy, and this is a news update, a pulse check 1 week on from the first release of those UFO files, and there is so much to get through. I am not spending this episode rehashing the first batch. I've discussed that already with you. I've been on the Doomer Friday show last week discussing things. A lot of you have seen the files, you've seen the videos, you've seen the stills, the reactions and the online debate, the disappointment, the excitement, and everything else in between. But what's happened since then is really interesting, because the conversation has now shifted from what was in batch one to what happens next. Are more videos coming? Are agencies actually going to comply? And that's a big one. Is Congress now going after private contractors? Are other countries now paying attention? And why are so many mainstream voices suddenly, finally, talking about UFOs, aliens, disclosure, and first contact? So let's get into it. Like I say, it has been a week since that first batch of releases, and they appeared on that war.gov UFO site. And I think it's fair to say that mixed reaction has continued and carried on. Some people thought it was genuinely significant. Some people thought it was symbolic as a first step. Others fairly thought it was underwhelming. All of that is fair. And some looked at the stills, the videos and records and said, is this it? And that includes the general public. I just done a friend's podcast yesterday that is pop culture podcast. They are not UFO friendly necessarily, but they had a lot of questions around it. And one of them even said the point that he feels this is a little bit different. And for me, that personally was quite a big mover of the needle, that my mate Jack was like, this feels different. It might not turn out to be, we don't know, but yeah. So it didn't give us clean, undeniable public evidence. And that's what a lot of people want. But I don't think it should be dismissed as meaningless. And a lot of the stories I'm going to discuss today, I think are going to just add to the noise, add to the fuel, to the fire. And yeah, it's been absolutely crazy, because the story is less about the first batch and more about the process that is potentially going to follow on from now. That brings us to Congressman Eric Burleson, who is probably at the tip of the spear when it comes to the UFO topic right now. There was a short news clip circulating of Eric Burleson talking about what happens next, and I think this is probably the strongest news spine for where we are right now, because he said not just more files might be coming. He talked about a memo potentially from President Trump that would force agencies to release information. This could be huge, and I'm going to play that clip for you now.
I think what we're about to see is a memo come out that will be extremely aggressive towards this release. And the reason is that you're not really going to know what you don't know, right? And so rather than just go trying to chase ghosts throughout all these government agencies, the president is going to issue a memo that requires, with stiff penalties, the release of any and all information and files related to this topic, so that they can go about the declassification process.
Now, that is more interesting to me than batch one itself, because a file drop is one thing, but a memo with penalties, if it actually happens and actually has teeth, and that's such a big thing. We've heard so many times over the last couple of years that we've got this coming, or a Disclosure Act coming, or a bill coming, and very often they fail or falter to even get through some of those initial hurdles. Burleson's point is this: you don't know what you don't know. So instead of wandering around different agencies trying to chase ghosts, force them to hand over anything related to this topic. Now, we need to be careful. We don't know exactly what that memo would look like. We don't know how enforceable it would even be. We don't know whether agencies would comply fully. And we don't know what would still be withheld under national security grounds. But if Burleson's right, then batch one may not have been the main event. And it certainly doesn't seem like that's been the case. It may have been the opening move. To follow on from that, that's another piece of reaction that's come doing the rounds, is off the back of Jeremy Corbell's documentary. He's been obviously very vocal online, a lot of interviews popping up. I reviewed the documentary, or I spoke to the director, Michael Lazowski, at the end of the last news update, and I'll be reviewing the documentary really soon. Also, Jeremy is coming on. But he posted online just yesterday, in relation to Anna Paulina Luna. He was told the new director of Arrow is actually fully complying with us now and working at the direction of the White House. We are in a process of reviewing part of the videos set to be released next week. Have not asked for any audits, but can confirm that the 40 plus videos will be released. So that's apparently from Anna Paulina Luna to Jeremy Corbell. Now, if that's accurate, that's a huge claim. 40 plus videos, we've heard the number of 46, is not nothing. But the question is not just, are more videos coming? It is going to be, what are the videos? Are they new, old? Are they known internally? Are we going to get the data around it, dates, locations, case files, sensor data? Are they going to be labelled unresolved? Are they going to be bloody? Are we going to get context? Are they going to be short, long? We have been here before. A video can be fascinating, and I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out. We have seen some clips already at the end of Jeremy Corbell's Sleeping Dog documentary, and I do recommend that you go and watch that, folks. We could end up with a lot more debate regarding the videos that are going to come next, not less. So I am interested. I'm hopeful. They do look interesting, but I don't think we're still yet to get Smoking Gun. People are expecting and wanting HD and 4K footage, and I don't think we're going to get that. If the next release does, however, contain stronger footage, proper metadata, chain of custody, case backgrounds, enough for serious analysis, then yeah, the story can move and can change quickly. If it's another batch of intriguing but unclear clips, then the focus shifts. It becomes less about what are these objects and more about who is deciding what the public gets to see. And that, again, is another angle for this story. Another part of it is that, and this is getting a lot of attention, was the religious angle in the last couple of weeks. Now, there was a lot of chatter online about pastors being briefed, faith communities being prepared, and people trying to connect the dots to disclosure that something's coming and we have to prepare our followers for this. And Eric Burleson made a few comments online in the last couple of days that I think are really worth bringing up and bringing some calm to this. It's what I've really liked about these last couple of news updates is how related every single story is. They all seem so different, but they're all connected. But here is Eric Burleson's comments. The Bible does not say the devil walks around with a pitchfork and a tail. It doesn't say angels have halos. Read what the Bible actually says, not what medieval art added. If you're grounded in your faith, no disclosure can shake it. Now, I think that's an interesting comment. Burleson's pushing back against those ideas that UFO disclosure would automatically destroy religious faith around the world. That's something since I started this podcast 6 years ago. I have had something change in my thinking around that religion is actually far more prepared for these conversations than many folks would be led to believe, especially the general public. He also clarifies something else, and this is important. He said, and I quote, "I told a group of pastors something simple, know your Bible. A podcaster ran with it and made up the rest. The pastor who conflated my name with his own theory has already apologised. I haven't changed my faith and I haven't changed my approach. Show me first." That last line's the key one, show me first. And Eric Burleson, famously congressman for Missouri, the show me state, has said that very often. Honestly, that's where I think a lot of folks should be, and it's healthy to be. Be open, be curious. don't panic, and all of this, don't twist people's words. And I've got another story about that coming up soon. Show me first, show me the files, give us the videos, give us the paper trail, give us the evidence that you have, because this is where the UFO topic can certainly get away from itself. Someone says they spoke to pastors. Someone else says priests are being prepped. Someone else connects that to Neil deGrasse Tyson. Someone else connects it to a movie release. And suddenly we have a giant theory about a coordinated messages. Maybe there is more going on, but when there's so many holes around that, we have to be very, very careful. We have to separate confirmed statements from interpretation. Burleson's comments for me get really substantive at that point, because he's also again followed up around contractors and private entities. And again, this is, seems to be a real directed dig and barb aimed at the people who are truly keeping this UFO secret covered up. He's not just talking about faith and public reaction here. He talks about deeper investigation. Real big comment from him, and again I'll quote, "If you really want to hide something from Congress, you don't put it in a government file cabinet. You hand it to a private contractor. That's why my investigation is following the trail into RAND, MITRE, Aerospace Corp, MIT Lincoln Labs, and the Northrop Grummans of the world." That's a big statement, because if there is anything deeper, if there are legacy programs, materials, crash retrievals, reverse engineering efforts, hidden records, whatever it may be, the argument has long been that it may not sit neatly inside one obvious government office. It may have been buried in the contractor ecosystem, private industry, research labs, aerospace companies, special access programs, subcontractors, compartmentalized structures. I could go on and on, folks. Places where Congress might not have the same easy line of sight. And Burleson followed that up to say the first batch of UAP files released was just the low-hanging fruit. The deeper investigation is into the partnership between government agencies and private contractors. Again, he names RAND, MITRE, Lincoln Labs. The American people deserve transparency. And I always appreciate he says the American people, because he works for the American people. But the people of the world deserve transparency on this. And that's the serious part of this story. If he's right, the first batch, like we said, and many of us said this, was never going to answer the big questions. The real test is whether Congress, the White House, investigators, whoever is involved, can actually follow the trail into the contractor world. Because release the files sounds simple, and not just UFOs. But what if the files are split across agencies? What if some of the most sensitive material is in private hands? And I think most of us believe that. What if the people with the knowledge are not an elected office? And again, that's very likely. Presidents come and go, senators come and go, but the programs, the contracts, and the gatekeepers remain. That's where the story gets really complicated. I'll read a listener comment just before we move on to some more news stories. It was from Layer. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that properly. Congress is definitely butting heads with the gatekeepers and special access programs. Hopefully the good guys come out on top. I think it's a common misconception that the US is one giant homogenous hierarchy of government. There are different branches of power that are constantly playing tug of war with each other, and this topic is no different. And that's a really good point. I appreciate that one. We often say, and I say it too, and try and clear it up, the government, as if this is one brain, one machine, one locked filing cabinet. But it isn't. It's agencies, committees, military branches, you know, all that kind of thing. So this is not one government hiding one secret. It may be a power struggle between different parts of the same system. And that's why the contractor angle matters. The question isn't, does the government know? The question could be, which part of the system knows what? Which part is resisting? And which part is trying to pull it into daylight? And that's where congressmen and women are fighting to try and pull some aspects of this topic into daylight, folks. There was a small but interesting international angle. Now, the Japan Times reported that Tokyo was analysing the Pentagon's UFO files with real interest, with sightings near Japan being part of that conversation that was released. Online, that's quickly became, Japan is about to release the UFO files. I think that's far too strong. I'll give you my take, and it's more measured. Two of the US-released videos were reportedly filmed around Japan, so it makes sense Japanese officials would look at those cases. If material released by the US involves your region, your airspace, your waters, your military environment, you're going to pay attention. But that's not the same as Japan preparing its own disclosure drop. So put it this way, Japan may be reviewing cases. That is not the same as Japan preparing a UFO file release. Still, it matters because it shows this is not just a US conversation anymore. If these files touched allied countries, those countries are going to be pulled into the aftermath. A listener comment around that from Mr. Thomas, he says, the South American countries probably have good stuff, especially Peru and Brazil. I would like to see them publish. I agree with the spirit of that too. The UFO conversation gets very US heavy. Listen to this accent talking about the UFO subject. Congress, Arrow, the Pentagon, the White House, American contractors, American presidents. But if this phenomenon is real, it's not American. It does not care about where borders are. And South America is a huge part of UFO history. As much as that, you know, if someone's ever bought you a piece of the moon, folks, I don't doubt when the day comes, you cannot claim that piece of the moon to be your own. I'm sorry to break that news to you. Brazil has Colares, Virginia, Operation Prato, decades of major cases. Peru has had official military interest and anomalous aerial phenomena. You could rhyme off Chile, Argentina, France, the UK, Japan, Brazil, Peru. All of those places matter and cheekily are talked about in my book, Atlas of UFOs. So if we are talking about transparency, it can't just be an American story. This isn't an American story, but we can't also take away that the Americans are largely leading the way. And for those of us outside of the States, that is frustrating because surely there is strength in numbers and what other governments may or may not be able to know or do around this. If countries have files and good evidence, release them. Let researchers compare patterns across borders. Are there differences? Are there similarities? Stop treating this as if the entire UFO question begins and ends in Washington, D.C., because it certainly doesn't. And many of you know that. On that point, I asked listeners from various countries to get in touch and tell me what was being said. Many folks in Australia reached out to say nothing had happened and it was very quiet in the mainstream. On YouTube, Press Depet or Depetti sent this in from Denmark. They talked about the files in morning TV as well as in the evening news here in Denmark. Keep up the good work and Godspeed. Thank you. And I love that because it backs up something I've been watching closely. Not just what was released, but where the story travelled to. If this is being covered on morning TV and the evening news in Denmark, then even if the people were underwhelmed by batch one, the story itself is crossing borders, and that's so important. The files definitely did not answer everything, but the conversation is not staying local. And the last time that really happened was the Obama and Trump comments, of which a lot of this has come from back in February. But before that, you're going to David Grush. On that, a Joe Rogan clip has resurfaced that again is probably relevant to a lot of this when I mentioned David Grush. It's an interview Rogan done some time ago. It's not a brand new comment, so it's not being presented as such, but it's been circulating again, and honestly, it fits the moment well. Rogan talks about how frustrating the slow drip of UFO disclosure is. He said, nobody imagined disclosure would be this boring, this bureaucratic, and this slow. But then he makes the point that this might actually be what makes it feel real to him. That if institutions had something genuinely explosive, maybe, this is how they do it. This is how they would do it. Not one big press conference, not the president walking out and saying we are not alone, but it's redactions, permissions, memos, tiny releases, slow drip, bureaucratic language, enough friction that people get bored before they get answers. Rogan says, now I think it's real. Because that is what he thinks they would do if they had something real. And I think that's really interesting, an interesting lens for this moment, because a lot of people looked at the first file release and said, that was disappointing. But Rogan's point is the opposite. Maybe the disappointment is part of the process. Maybe the most exciting subject imaginable has been buried under boring bureaucracy. That doesn't mean the claims are true, all of them. Boredom is not evidence. Slow release is not proof. But it's a smart point about human psychology. If you want to release something without creating a massive shock moment, you don't do it all at once. You turn it into paperwork. You turn it into redactions. You make people argue about file names, definitions, dates and processes. And by the time something meaningful arrives, perhaps half the public has already tuned out. If you're on the free feeds, folks, you're going to hear a quick advert. Please support the sponsors of the show. It makes a massive difference to me. I really do appreciate it if you get something from it. If you're on any of the paid platforms, you won't hear the adverts and you'll hear me just carry on with a really big story in mainstream platform that has just hosted two huge names and picked out some huge comments on this incredible subject. Now, look, on this show, we spend a lot of time asking what's really going on, what's hidden, what's misunderstood, and what's been staring us in the face the whole time. And honestly, weight loss can feel a bit like that too. You think you've figured it out, then life gets busy, routines slip, the weight creeps back on, and suddenly you're wondering how you got there again, staring at yourself on your webcam, recording your UFO podcast with your big rosy cheeks. I've had that myself over the last few years. My weight's gone up and down, so I know how frustrating it can be trying to stay consistent. It does make me say "daggummit" all too often. That's where Weight Loss by Hims comes in. Hims offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hims, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite and eat less, so success is within reach. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill for weight loss, so there are no needles needed. Through Hims, everything happens online. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Hims makes hitting your goals seamless by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and in-app lifestyle and nutrition support, like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Ready to reach your goals? Visit hims.com/thatufo to get a personalised, affordable plan that gets you. That's hims.com/thatufo. hims.com/thatufo. Weight loss by Hims is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information and restrictions, visit hims.com. So all the while this is happening, the subject is moving into those mainstream spaces. Like I say, it's been on Rogan for a long time. It's been on Sean Ryan. It's been on Lex Friedman. But and we've got our own UFO-friendly podcast. Jesse Michaels, Chris Ramsey, Danny Jones all host and have big platforms for the UFO topic and speakers. But we need to try and get some of those bigger platforms that don't normally discuss UFOs involved. And that has just happened. One of the best and biggest examples was this week, Diary of a CEO, hosted by Stephen Bartlett. For anyone who doesn't know, Stephen Bartlett's a British entrepreneur, investor, author, and former dragon on Dragon's Den. I believe that was Shark Tank in the United States. And Diary of a CEO is one of the biggest long-form interview podcasts in the world. This is not a niche UFO platform. This is a massive mainstream audience that normally sits in the world of business, psychology, health, performance, culture, and big, big public figures. And the guests were significant too. Dan Farah is the filmmaker behind the Age of Disclosure documentary, which has obviously put out a lot of these current claims into one place and brought together senior political figures, intelligence and military voices around the subject. Many of you will have seen it by now. And Dr. Hal Puthoff, who is a physicist. Many of you will know the name, but if you don't, he's worked around intelligence and defence-linked research for decades, including programmes connected to remote viewing, advanced physics and UEP-related investigations. Whether people agree with his conclusions or not, he is not just some random online commentator. So when you have Stephen Bartlett on that platform sitting down with Dan Farah and Puthoff for a long conversation about UEP, aliens, crash retrievals, hidden programs, non-human intelligence and advanced physics, that's significant, not because it's proving claims, but because it shows where the conversation is now sitting culturally and where it's now shifting to. A few years ago, this kind of conversation would have been mostly inside of UFO media. Now it's being presented to a huge mainstream audience with serious lighting, serious branding, serious guests and serious language, and all of that matters. Now, in the interview itself, Dan Farah makes claims that there has been an 80-year cover-up of the existence of NHI, non-human intelligence. He talks about recovered craft. He talks about non-human bodies. He brings up legacy programs, secrecy, contractors, presidents being kept in the dark, and a race to reverse engineer technology, of non-human origin. Puthoff also makes a massive statement saying the evidence is absolutely clear there is some form of life with advanced technology here on Earth already. Those are not small claims. But what I liked about the interview, folks, and I do recommend you take 90 minutes to go and watch it, is that Stephen Bartlett did ask some of the obvious questions that the public would be thinking. At one point, they're talking about crashes and bodies and whistleblowers. And Stephen basically says, so the basis of that evidence is that some people have said it. And for me, that's a key tension in this entire subject. You can have very credible people with really impressive backgrounds who have, and you can have intelligence officials, scientists, military figures. But when the public-facing evidence still relies heavily on testimony, the public is being asked to trust people who are saying they've seen something that we haven't. That doesn't make it false, but it does explain why people still want more. Stephen also asks the normal person question, why has this not been captured clearly on an iPhone? Again, fair question. The answer given in the interview revolves around sensors, classified footage, and possible distortion around craft if they're using some kind of warp bubble or space-time effect. Interesting, definitely. Enough for everyone? The public, I'm thinking here? Probably not. And that's where the whole conversation sits right now, doesn't it? Massive claims being made on mainstream platforms, getting mainstream attention. There are more people willing to discuss this seriously and present it to their audiences, but the evidence gap is still the evidence gap, and that needs to be addressed, and that's hopefully what future releases do with the whole war.gov situation. Now, here's a slightly controversial one for many of you. Speaking of mainstream attention, and bear in mind, folks, this is the last week's worth of news, not even 7 days. This is like four or five days now. It's crazy that all of this is happening at the same time. Neil deGrasse Tyson has released a book, yes, that Neil deGrasse Tyson, called Take Me to Your Leader, Perspectives on Your First Alien Encounter. The book is basically Tyson doing popular science through the lens of first contact. It looks at what aliens might look like, how they might travel, how we might communicate with them, and how humans should think about the possibility of meeting an advanced intelligence. Now, to be fair, this is not the same thing as a UFO disclosure book. For those of you on YouTube, I'll hold up that I have an advanced copy of said book just now. And I'll get to that in just a second, why I have an advanced copy. There's a difference between saying let's think scientifically about alien life and saying crash retrieval programs are real. The backlash from parts of the UFO community to this book is obvious, though, because Tyson has been one of the most dismissive mainstream science voices when it comes to UFOs. Not just sceptical, dismissive, and there is a difference. A sceptic would say, show me the evidence. A dismissive person can sometimes come across as, this subject is silly and the people interested in it are wasting their time. And Neil deGrasse Tyson has done that. So when someone who has spent years pouring cold water on UFO claims releases a book about aliens and first contact, people are going to side-eye it. I'll be honest, there's a personal angle here for me too. I showed you the advanced copy of the book. His publisher reached out to me some time ago and they asked me, would you like to interview Neil and would you like a copy of the book? I said I would love to speak to Neil because I feel I would ask him some interesting questions. I would clearly talk about the book, but also I would like to platform him on a subject that he has ridiculed for a long time and be completely and thoroughly professional about the whole thing, folks. But they decided against it. Even though they offered me the interview, when I said yes, they ignored me for the best part of a month and then said he was too busy. But it is interesting, isn't it? Because this audience is exactly where that tension is being discussed. You can't dismiss the UFO community for years and then be surprised when someone in the community says, hold on, are you engaging with this topic properly? Or are you borrowing cultural heat around aliens when there's a book to promote? That doesn't mean Tyson's wrong about everything. It doesn't mean his book is bad, and I'll review it properly in the coming weeks. And it doesn't mean popular science books about alien life should only be written by UFO researchers, but tone matters. And if you mock or dismiss a subject for long enough, don't be surprised when the people in that subject question your timing. Mr. deGrasse Tyson, I would still love to host an interview with you and give you a chance to put across your side of the story to this community, but I'm going to err on the side of he won't bother coming on. But I'll give the book as fair a review as I was going to in the first place anyway, folks. Another story which has got people talking online connects comments from Guy Consolmagno. I hope I'm saying that properly. Now, he is a Jesuit brother, astronomer and planetary scientist. He was the director of the Vatican Observatory and is often referred to as the Pope's astronomer. In a recent clip, he was very sceptical about UFO evidence. This dropped in the last kind of 48 hours. He said, if these are the best images they've got, they are no better than what we had in 1948. He also points to the fact we all have phones in our pockets now. We can film cats playing piano, police brutality, everyday chaos, everything. So why, if UFOs are so common and so significant, do we not have better imagery? Not an unfair point, but he goes about it in a dismissive way for me. He also says amateur astronomers, the people who actually know the sky well, tend to be amongst the most sceptical. He says if someone came to him wanting to study UFOs, he would say, forget it, it's a dead end. Now, I think he makes a fair scientific point in places. If your standard is hard, public, repeatable scientific evidence, then yes, the UFO subject still has some problems. It has testimony, it has cases, it has videos, it has documents, it has patterns. It has some very serious people saying very serious things, but it doesn't yet have the kind of open, public, undeniable evidence that ends the debate, so fair enough. But I'm also going to be really honest here with Guy. As someone like myself who is not religious, I find it a bit rich when someone from a deeply religious worldview talks about UFO belief as if it's uniquely faith-based, or it can act as some kind of religious substitute, because from the outside looking in, a non-religious person like me might say, well, hang on, isn't a lot of that also belief, testimony, tradition, personal experience, trust in authority and claims that are not always backed by the kind of hard evidence science demands? That's religion to me. I'm not saying that to mock anyone of faith. People are entitled to their beliefs. But if we're going to talk about evidence, belief and testimony, then let's be consistent. I think both things can be true. UFO believers should be careful not to turn this subject into a faith system. But religious scientists should also be careful about sounding too superior when talking about evidence and belief. And that brings me to a listener question from Owini, who said, apparently they're prepping priests, and today Neil deGrasse Tyson came out and said people should get ready. He's always been sceptical, which tells me he knows it's coming. I feel this is really the time. Disclosure Day used posts about the drop in promotional material. Definitely some messaging going on from all sides. Good messaging. We'll see. And I get why people feel that way. Thank you for sending that in. When you put it all together, it does feel like a lot. Burleson talking to pastors, even though I've cleared up exactly what was said. Neil deGrasse Tyson releasing an alien book. Disclosure Day, Spielberg's movie, which is due out in 4 weeks' time, using the file drop and promotional material. Joe Rogan's clips resurfacing. Diary of a CEO, with over 1 million views, talking UAP with Hal Puthoff and Dan Farah. Japan paying attention. Mainstream news in different countries picking this up. It can feel like something's being seeded everywhere at once. But I'm going to separate two things. One, there is clearly more messaging around this topic now, perhaps more than ever. That's true. It's in politics, it's in podcasts, it's in books, film, mainstream media, religion, sceptical circles and UFO circles. But number two, that does not automatically mean everyone secretly knows disclosure is coming. Sometimes cultural movements look like coordination. Sometimes everyone is just reacting to the same moment. So my answer would be this. I think we are in a disclosure culture moment. I'm not yet ready to say we're in a coordinated disclosure operation, folks. I think there's some coincidence. I think there's some people looking for coincidence. Burleson's line, I'll come back to it. Show me first. That's where I am. Keep showing me the videos. Keep showing me the files. Bring me the contractor paper trail. Show me what's actually being withheld. Then we can judge whether this messaging is marketing, momentum, or is this something bigger? And I'm not saying that it isn't the latter there, folks. Listener Matt sent in a more emotional comment around Jeremy Corbell and his film Sleeping Dog. He says, I've seen it, and I have to say I almost get the vibe that Jeremy is pulling a Lazar. He's showing the world proof of his dead man switch, especially the programme. Ever since that second weaponized with Matt Brown, I got the impression he was stressed, like it was becoming more than just verbal or written threats. He's a good dude up against evil. It hits me in the feels pretty hard. Hopefully this movie will wake some more people up to the crap their government is doing behind their backs and to follow their citizens. Thank you for sending that in. And I think that captures how some people feel. Whether you like Jeremy Corbell's style or not, the idea of people being threatened, pressured or scared to speak is clearly happening and is very serious. I'd be cautious with terms like dead man switch because Jeremy hasn't said that directly about this, but I totally get why you could look at it and go 2 + 2 = 4. What I do think is fair is that this documentary seems to have landed emotionally with people because it isn't just about UFOs. It's about intimidation, secrecy, pressure, and what happens to people who try to push against a system they believe is hiding something. And that's a really powerful theme that runs through his documentary. But again, have to separate emotion from evidence. And I think I do that relatively well here, folks, and hopefully that's why you listen and watch. But it doesn't replace the need to prove the claims, and we're hoping that proof is coming. So this is a comment from We Were Never Alone. So they said, it gets to the heart, I think, of where we are 1 week in. Excellent work, Andy, and that was based on my last news update, so thank you. The biggest takeaway for me is that the first batch was never going to be the final answer. It feels more like a test of public reaction and political pressure. If the next release contains stronger footage with proper data behind it, this topic changes overnight. If it does not, then the focus shifts from what are these objects to who is deciding what we are allowed to see. I've been digging into this on my own channel too, because I think the next few weeks could be very important. Thank you so much for sending that in. People can check out We Are Not Alone. I think that's the fork in the road we are at. If the next release gives us stronger footage, proper context, dates, sensor data, background, and enough information for people to really assess it, then the topic can quickly change. I'm willing to give not even just the next, but perhaps the release after the benefit of the doubt. I'm looking for the next couple to see what is in it, not just going to throw the baby out with the bathwater after the next release. But if the next release is another batch of vague files, cropped clips and unclear stills, material without context, the story is going to quickly become less about the objects and more about the process. Like you say there, who is choosing what comes out? Who gets to redact it? Who is deciding what the public can handle? That's what really pisses people off. And who is resisting the request for this material? If the best material is allegedly sitting with agencies, contractors, or special access programs, how does Congress even get to it? That's the real question. That's where we're at right now. And that's roughly where I'm going to leave this for today, folks. And because whatever you think about that first batch of files, whatever you think about the claims, the clips, the podcast, the books, the backlash, the topic is moving so quickly right now. The news stories are landing almost daily, and I don't doubt by the time you've listened to this, there will be more follow-up and more updates to come. There are people commenting on this who maybe would not have touched it a few months ago, let alone a few years ago, and the conversation is no longer contained to UFO circles. It's now politicians, scientists, mainstream podcasts, international news, religious voices, skeptics and believers, and of course, everyone in between. Not every claim is true. Not every file is important. It does not mean every rumour is worth running with, but it does mean this is a genuinely fascinating moment for me to be covering the subject and for you to be following it. So let's keep our heads, don't believe everything, don't dismiss everything, and watch what comes next. Look for who benefits, who is resisting, and most importantly, ask to see the evidence. As always, thank you for listening. Thank you for checking this one out. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the comments below on YouTube. Get in touch with me on the audio platforms too, please. I would love to hear from you via email or thatufopodcast.com and the contact form. If you've enjoyed this, and again, you're on YouTube, leave a like, please subscribe, please comment below. It all makes a massive difference. On audio platforms, please leave a 5-star review for the podcast. And if you've picked up a copy of Atlas of Unidentified Flying Objects, my book is available on Amazon on a really good offer in the US and the UK just now. Please also go and leave a 5-star review. It takes just a couple of minutes. And of course, you can support the podcast on Apple, Patreon, Spotify, and YouTube with a paid membership, and it goes greatly to helping me keep this coming, keep it coming as regular as I'm managing to do it right now as well, and keeping the content flowing. Really appreciate you listening. We are in interesting times, folks. This could go so many different ways. I'll be here for it along the way, and I'm sure you will too. Let's see what happens in the coming days and weeks. Thank you for listening, and I'll speak to you all very, very soon.